Laughter is a radical act of love that you give to yourself.
Welcome to The Lavender Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today's episode is on the power of creativity, connection, courage, and humor in dealing with mental health challenges. We touch on topics like dealing with imposter syndrome, depression and anxiety, and finding joy and humor even in life's darkest moments. Our guest today is Jenny Lawson. Jenny Lawson, known online as The Bloggess, is a number one New York Times bestselling author and blogger best known for her darkly humorous takes on her own life and for her authentic writing on dealing with mental illness. Her bestsellers include Let's Pretend This Never Happened, Furiously Happy, Broken in the Best Possible Way, and You Are Here. Before we begin, I have something special to share. If you're ready to transform your life in 2025, the Artist of Life Workbook is your ultimate guide. This all-in-one tool is packed with prompts and exercises to help you reflect, set powerful goals, and stay accountable to them, and design a life you truly love. Start your year with clarity and intention. You can find it at shop.lavender.com. All right, let's dive into the episode. Hello, Jenny. Welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
Oh, I am really happy to be here with you today. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for being here. Okay, so let's start going into your story. So you've been blogging for over a decade. You've written several best-selling books. Can you share what first inspired you to start The Bloggess and how it evolved over time?
Sure. So it's sort of a long story short. When I was growing up, I had a lot of problems with anxiety. And so I didn't really communicate with people very much. I was very shy. And one of the best ways that I could communicate without letting my anxiety get to me was through writing. So I've always written, and I started reading a parenting blog that was in the Houston Chronicle, or a local newspaper when I lived in Houston. And the mom who was writing it said, "I don't think I can do this anymore. I don't think you can be a blogger and a parent at the same time." And I reached out to the editor and said, "I'm a mom, and I think I can do this, and I'll do it for free." And I think it was that "I'll do it for free" that sort of convinced them that maybe. And I really luckily had found a great community of people who understood my very strange sense of humor. But I was continually getting in trouble. I live in Texas, and it's a little bit conservative, and I, kind of walk the line. And I was always getting a little bit in trouble for maybe, stepping a little bit too far. And so I decided that I would start my own blog so I could say whatever I wanted. And I thought, Mr., Mistress, Blogger, Bloggess, that makes sense. And so I started that just as a way to talk about my life and to reach out to people and find a community. And what I found is that the very weird sense of humor that I have, that in the past people either said, "This person is nuts," or they said, "This person is exactly like me. Let's be friends forever." I was able to find that 10% of the population of like the weirdos and the misfits. And it was really actually quite lovely and life-changing.
I love that you found your people. The internet is so amazing at that. Were you writing about mental health in the beginning? What was the, main focus of your writing?
So when I first started writing, it was just about parenthood and about how it wasn't what I expected. It was harder. It was good. I never regretted it, but I just felt like nobody was being really honest about how hard it was. So I wrote primarily about that. What I didn't share is that because I was writing humor, and all of these people would write back and be like, this is so funny, this is so relatable. And it felt to me like I was lying, because I have depression, I have anxiety, I have dealt with mental illness my whole life. And so during those time periods when I would be in a depression and I couldn't think, and I, you know, couldn't get up off of the couch, and I, you know, the only thing I could do was just breathe and get through it, I would schedule these posts that I had saved for these times. And it felt like this weird cognitive dissonance of people saying, oh, you're so funny, when I was just barely surviving during those times. And so I decided that I would talk about the fact that I was dealing with depression. And this was, oh gosh, 15, 16, 7. Oh my gosh. It was a long time ago. And the stigma is still there, but it was much stronger at that point. And so I was very afraid of how people would react. And what I found is that not only were people, did they not run away from me screaming, which is what I was afraid would happen, that so many of them in the comments said, me too. I also, you know, deal with this liar in my head. I also, you know, wonder if I'm supposed to be here. And what's really sort of amazing is not only did it make me realize how not alone I am, but over the next period of months, I started getting these emails from people who would say that they had been actively in the process of planning their suicide and decided to get help, not because of what I wrote, but because they saw 2,000 people in the comments saying, me too. I also feel like, is my life worth living? Am I supposed to be here? And they thought, well, that can't be true. And they thought, well, if that's not true for them, maybe it's also not true for me. Maybe I also need to give myself the benefit of the doubt that I'm worth fighting for. And because of that, they got help and they were doing great. And I think it's so amazing that there are people who anonymously left these comments and have no idea that they saved other people's lives. You know, we put these ripples out there and you don't know how you affect others. It's such a good reminder, I think, to everybody, but even to myself, when, you know, depression lies so cunningly and it seems so real at the time. And no matter how many times I've gone through it, and no matter how many times I can look in the past and say, I know this isn't true, I know this is irrational, it can feel so real at the time. So going back and reading those letters just remind me every single time, I'm worth it. I'm going to come out of this. It's going to be like breathing for the first time after being underwater for too long, and it's going to suck and it's going to feel like it's a long time, but it is so worth it.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And it's so true how just the, like, it, people don't even need to give you advice or anything. Just the fact that they say, I understand you. I feel that way too. I can relate. That is enough to make people feel like they're not alone. Time for a short break. Today's episode is brought to you by LolaVie. The holidays are the perfect time to treat yourself and your hair to a little extra love. That's where LolaVie comes in. Founded by Jennifer Aniston, this award-winning hair care line uses clean, plant-based ingredients to strengthen and protect your hair. Powered by B-Pro3 Bond technology derived from chia seeds, LolaVie targets damage at its source for silky, healthy hair. Looking for a thoughtful gift? The Ultimate Care Kit, featuring Jen's favorites, restorative shampoo, conditioner, and glossing detangler, has everything for stronger, shinier hair. Gift it or keep it for yourself, because self-care goes a long way. unlock Jennifer Aniston approved hair at lolav.com and celebrate the holidays with stronger, healthier hair. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use the code LAVENDER15 at checkout. That's 15% off your order at lolavie.com with promo code LAVENDER15. Please note you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, so please support our show and tell them we sent you. Your hair will thank you. That brings me to another question that I was going to ask you much later on, but I'll ask now, is how do you think you've been impacted by your readers and your community? It seems like they've been a big part in your journey and helping you heal, right?
They have saved me over and over and over again. Especially because every time that I think I'm going to share this thing and this will be the thing that finally people will say, oh, you've gone too far. This is not, I don't understand. And so, for example, I deal with dermatillomania or trichotillomania, which is when you pull your hair, like pull it out, or you scratch yourself to the point of sort of self-harm. And it's a compulsive behavior that requires a lot of, like, it's therapy and it's work, and it's easy to sort of fall off the wagon, and you know, you're great for a year and then you have a really bad night. And I was so afraid to talk about that. But at the same time, I really felt like maybe there are other people out there who also deal with this. And I had so many people who, when I would go on book tour, I would see these people who would come up and they would whisper, me too. I also have dermatillomania. I never knew. I didn't even know that that was a word for it. And now I've been able to, you know, talk to a therapist and, you know, not only that, but also we can share hints and hacks. And there are all these little things where you think you're alone and you have all of this shame. But if you can talk about it, suddenly someone says, you know, what's really helpful for me is if I'm having a bad night, I'll put Band-Aids around my fingers, because then it makes it hard to scan, to feel, you know, for like imperfections on your face that you're going to pick at. And I'm like, that's so brilliant. That's so, and then I'm like, oh, you know, here's something that's helped me is, you know, you take some glue and you put it on your hands and you let it dry, and then you can just peel it off. And that way, you know, it's, you're not picking at your skin, but you're still doing something that gives you some of the same feelings. And that's how we can heal, is by saying, I found this. What about this? Have you tried this? And also just to let everybody know, every single person out there is broken in their own way. And you may not have a label for it. And you may not, you know, say, oh, I'm dealing with, you know, chronic pain or mental illness or whatever, but everybody has a struggle. Everybody is dealing with baggage or with trauma or with, you know, some personal challenge that is incredible that maybe nobody knows about. And opening up, when I open up, it gives other people permission to open up to me. And then I can learn from them. And I think it gives you so much more compassion, especially, you know, if you suffer from any of that. And it sucks. I would never say, I'm so glad I have depression or, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or chronic pain, or I'd never be like, yay for that. I would like it all to be gone. But there are some silver linings that come with that. And I think one of those is it does give you a lot of compassion for other people. And it gives you the ability to say, I need help. And by saying I need help, it gives other people around you the ability to say, oh, that's what that looks like, to ask for help. Oh, maybe I can do that in the future. And also it's really helpful because I have so many people who read my books who they only read them because maybe they just like the humor, because that's, my books are primarily humor. And then, but they're all about my life. And so of course there's, you know, some dark stuff. So often people will say, your book is really funny, but I didn't really get it because I don't deal with this, but you know, my husband deals with this, or my kid has this. And so I have such a better idea of what this is like, and that it's not just made up, and it's not just, maybe you should just smile more. You know, it's like, oh, actually, there's...
Right. You're giving people perspective.
Exactly.
The more you share. Yeah, let's talk about your approach to your writing, because I think because it's humor, it makes it feel light, even when you're talking about something heavy and real. And it's very authentic and raw, very vulnerable, right? So tell me about that approach. Did it come naturally? Is it something that you enjoy doing? And how does that creative layer help you, I guess, cope or heal?
For me, humor has always come naturally, in particular, dark humor. I am the kind of person where, you know, my sister and I, if we're sitting at a funeral for a family member, we're going to make some joke and start laughing in the middle of tears. And I think that some people may look at that and say, oh, how rude. But I think it's just the opposite. I think it's all about celebrating joy whenever you possibly can. There's also something really wonderful about if you can laugh at something scary or dark, it makes it smaller. It shrinks that monster. And it also creates sort of an on-ramp where people feel more comfortable talking to you about it and asking about it. And then they can laugh about their own issues. And then just all of us together can see the ridiculousness of life, but also the joy of life. And you know, it's not always happy and fun. I do have some dark stuff in there, but I think anytime you can take the opportunity to laugh and to say something funny or unexpected, and my humor is very odd, I would say. And so people either, they come in and they're like, this is amazing. I've had so many people who have said, I was laughing so hard on a plane that people thought I was crying. And people were like, do you need a drink? Do you need help? And they were like, this is the greatest thing ever. This is wonderful.
I love that. That's a magic, it's a superpower that you have. Do you have, I guess, tips or advice for other people? I mean, everyone's dealing with some sort of struggle, right? Whether it's mental illness, mental health, or just life in general. What advice do you have for them to take that other perspective, to see their life from a lighter, like to be able to laugh at things and not take life so seriously?
You know, I think it's work. I'd like to say, you know, oh, just do it, just laugh. But I think that you do have to keep that perspective of the world may look like a cold place, or the problems that you're going through may seem incredibly dark, and the future can be so scary, but laughter is a radical act of love that you give to yourself. And so doing things that bring you joy, that make you laugh, that drive you forward, that give you energy and excitement, whatever they are, you should never feel guilty about doing those things and bringing those things into your life. And I think so often we do go, you know, oh, well, you know, the world is dark, or, you know, people are suffering, and this is, and all that is true, and we still need to focus on that and do our best. But that doesn't mean that we should stop with joy, because that's the whole point of life. Anytime you have the opportunity to, you know, to talk to a friend or to laugh or to make a joke or to, you know, for me, art is a big thing. And I used to struggle with the fact that I would think I'm wasting my time because I'm doing these things that I enjoy. And that's so ridiculous, because time enjoyed is never time wasted. That's the whole reason that we're supposed to be here. And I think we often forget that. One of the things that has been really helpful to me is I will think about my own child. I think about, what do I want for them in life? What if they were in this exact same position, what would I want? And every time I'm like, I just want them to be happy. That's what I really want. So why wouldn't we do the same thing for ourselves? Why wouldn't we take care of ourselves the same way that we would even a pet? You know, with a pet, we're like, you know what? I think you need a nap. I think you need a treat. I think you need a snuggle. You know, why wouldn't we treat ourselves as well as we treat the dog, you know?
I totally agree with you. It's like time with Joy is never wasted. And it also reminds me that, you know how some people, I think they categorize some experiences as, oh, this is a serious place. This is a serious topic, right? There's no joy related to like serious things in life, but you're saying joy can be everywhere, even in the dark, even in death, even in like sickness, like everywhere. Exactly. There could be something where you can bring joy there. I love that perspective.
Exactly. You know, my, during COVID, my grandmother died of COVID, and it was so sad. But at the same time, all this ridiculousness happened where, because COVID was so, it was so insane, and you couldn't go up to the hospital. This was before people were vaccinated, before we, really knew anything. And the doctor called and they were like, I'm so sorry, she's passed. And we were really sad. And she was so stubborn. And so I told my mom, I was like, are you sure though? She's probably just faking it. Cause that seems like something she would do. She's probably like, I just want some time alone. And then my mom called me back like 30 minutes later. And she was like, welp, she's still alive. I'm like, how is she still alive? She's like, I guess they confused her with someone else. And so I was like, okay. And then she called an hour later. She was like, she's dead again.
Oh my goodness.
It was so sad, but also it was such a relief to be able to laugh and to say, this is exactly the story that Granny would have wanted. This is exactly the way that she would have wanted to be like, I was a zombie. I'm keeping guessing. And so instead of just mourning, which of course we did, having that ability to laugh and to keep bringing that joke up and to make these silly jokes that she would have loved too was such a gift. And instead of thinking about that time with only, ow, how hard that was, instead, my first thought is of my mom calling back and saying, she's dead again, and me going, oh, that is so Granny. So giving yourself permission to laugh at those things. But I will say, the thing that I think sometimes people get wrong is sometimes people try to find humor in things that aren't theirs. And that I think can be something else where it's like, oh, I heard your grandma died. Let me tell you a joke about that. You should wait.
No. Yeah. Not appropriate.
Exactly. Now, if they come up with a joke, then you can, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in that way, that's why humor works if you're talking about yourself and if there's like an element of truth to it. Like if it's not true at all, it just doesn't work and it feels rude. I don't know. There's so many layers. That's why it's not everyone is good at this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So Jenny, I want to ask you about your success with your books, because I remember reading somewhere that you have a lot of best-selling books. You've mentioned being surprised, like, oh, this book, it happened to be a bestseller. I had no idea that it would go that far. Like just the tone that you talk about your success is kind of, it makes it feel so effortless. And I wonder, how do you approach your creative projects? Like, do you go in with expectations or do you truly like let go of the outcome?
So my first book, I started working on the day that I turned 30 because I felt like I'm 30 years old. At that point, I wasn't a mother. I felt like, I'd accomplished some things, but I wasn't really in my life. I hadn't hit those goals that I thought that I would hit. And I thought, writing a book was one of the things that I wanted to do, but I didn't want to do it to publish it. I wanted to write basically a book of all of the stories that I was afraid I might forget, that I wanted to one day tell my kids if I ever had any. And so I started writing this book thinking, at least this is something that I can sort of move forward on. And I worked on it for so long with so many and years of previous work that I pulled out and thought, let's do this and let's do that. And so when my first book came out, which is called Let's Pretend This Never Happened, a mostly true memoir, it was a number one New York Times bestseller overnight. And I always say I was an overnight success and it only took me 11 years to get there because it took me so long to write this book. Whereas I have friends who they'll get on an airplane and by the time the airplane lands, they're like, I wrote two more books.
Oh my and God.
For me, you know, 5 years is not really long enough for me to write a book. So there's a lot of time in between each one of my books. And every time I think two things. One, I think I've waited too long. People are going to forget who I am. And then the other thing, because I deal a lot with imposter syndrome. And so I constantly, I second guess everything that I write. I struggle with paralysis where I'm just like, if I don't write anything, then I can't write anything wrong. I deal a lot with the fact that I feel like they're going to figure out that I'm not really funny or I'm not really interesting. And they'll be like, why? Why did we buy all these books before? And I thought, well, you know what? I bet the cure for imposter syndrome is just to like be really good at something. Cause then you're going to teach your brain, oh, look, I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. Clearly I can do this. But the problem with imposter syndrome is that it doesn't work that way. And so instead, every time one of my books would hit the bestseller list, I would have this weird cognitive dissonance of, are you sure? Like, I don't follow the rules. I don't write things the right way. You know, editors who look at it, they have to drink a lot. I have these rambling parentheticals. I just go off on weird tangents. I have footnotes that go to nothing. And so I always think, well, this is proof that I don't know what I'm doing. But what I have learned is that people want to meet you where you are. You're probably further along than you think you are, and you're probably better than you think you are. If you're walking around and you're like, oh my God, I'm so amazing, everybody else is awful, you don't have imposter syndrome, and you might not be right. But if you're walking around and you're like, I don't understand how I'm successful at this one thing, you probably do. And what you need to do is try to embrace that and remind yourself that no one can do the thing that you're doing exactly like you are doing it. I recently, this last week, I was going through some of my old writing and I pulled out this journal that I was keeping in elementary school. Every day you would have to write this sort of journal. And she'd, you know, give you a like a one page sort of, here's what you write about. And my teacher gave me the subject of individualism. And so I went off on this like crazy tangent. And I look at it now and I'm like, I know where I was going with this. And I bet this teacher did not appreciate it. And then I turn it over and I find out she did not appreciate it. And it was just written about, you know, you have raw talent, but you have to learn how to follow rules. And if you can't follow the rules, then you're never going to get far. And it's interesting because when my first book came out, it didn't follow any rules and still was really successful. And I have so many people who come to me and say, I wrote my book because I read yours and thought, if she can do it this way with like no rules, then I can do whatever I want to as well. And I don't know. It's just, that's kind of lovely.
I love hearing that because it's just like the magic of being yourself and just doing like, you know, you just did it your way, the best that you could do it. And it's not that you didn't work hard. You spent years writing, like you put the work in. And that's, I don't know, I love hearing stories like that, where it's like an overnight success because it was so authentic and so you, like just different from anything else.
Don't be afraid to break the rules. The book that I'm working on right now that I've been working on for years, and it's already 3 months past deadline, which is pretty normal for me. As I'm doing it, I'm thinking, what if half of it was written sideways so that when you're done with the book written this way, you can turn it this way. And then the other part of the book is in a different, and every time I think about something like that, I'm like, oh, they're never going to let me do that. But it's shocking how often, if you just ask, they will either say, maybe we never thought about that before. And about half the time, it ends up that they say, yeah, let's try it. Let's test it out.
I love that. That's amazing. I would say most people are too afraid to even go there, right? They might have these ideas, but they're like, oh, they stop themselves. Oh, that's too weird. I'm not even going to ask. Or that's strange. I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to, you know, people are creating within these constructs of what they think is okay. So what advice do you have for creatives to go deeper into that authenticity? Because it is scary. You don't know if it's going to succeed or not.
It is really terrifying. I would say, look at the things that you like, because when I look at, I read constantly. I love to read and I love to collect art. And so my whole house is filled with the weirdest art. And the books that I love the most are the strangest books. They're the books that I try to, you know, explain them to someone and they go, wait, what? What is it? Like, no, you don't understand. Oh my gosh, you're going to read it and you're going to love it. It's so incredible. But that same, all of those things, that artist or that author or that songwriter or that whatever, they could have stopped and said, oh, this is too weird. This is too, you know what? I should just make a book like everybody else's, and it's going to have like this particular arc, and it's going to go this particular way, and it's going to, but here's the deal, is that book probably already exists. There's probably lots of that book, but there's not going to be a book that you come up with yourself and say, I'm going to take a chance on doing something a little bit weird. And the same thing with art. The art in my house is the strangest, darkest, weirdest. People walk into my house and they're like, is that a full-size taxidermy Pegasus? And I'm like, yeah, it is. But it's not real, because Pegasuses don't exist. And they're like, but how? I'm like, well, it's like, it's fake fur. And then it's on this mannequin that's, and these are goose wings. And then they're like, okay, all right. Is this a full-sized goat sitting cross-legged reading a book on your couch? And I'm like, it is, but he died of natural causes. So, and it just, every single thing has a story, and it's not for everyone, but everything in this house is something that someone took a chance on and thought, no one is going to want this crazy thing. And I wanted it.
Someone did. Yeah.
Exactly.
You're so like, right.
Well, there's a song that's called, it's from this musical called Title of Show, and it's called, I think it's called Nine Favorite Things. And the lyrics are, I'd rather be nine people's favorite thing than 100 people's ninth favorite thing. And so it's all about like, you may have a small group of people who get it, but those people are loud and they want you, and you're going to be able to find the people who see you for who you are, and then you're going to inspire them, and then they're going to do art, and they're going to write, and they're going to, and that's how the world keeps going.
Yeah. I love this as a reminder for all creatives, right? It's not about appealing to everyone. It's about finding what makes you happy, what you love, and trusting that it will find its audience. You will find your people.
Exactly.
Love that. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about your books. I mean, you've written a lot of books, but which is your favorite?
I think the first one is my favorite, just because it gives
a personal.
And it gives a full, like, here's from my birth until kind of here's where I am. And so I think it's such a good sort of starting place. And I was able to use, because I really thought, I was like, I'm only going to write one book ever. And so I'm going to get all my best stories out. And then after it came out and it became really popular, my agent was like, so what's next? And I was like, oh, well, I haven't lived life, so I don't know. And it took a while before I finally realized, oh, okay, well, this is what book two is going to be about. And then book three happened. accidentally, because I was in the process of my next book was due and I was so stuck. And I was dealing with a lot of depression and anxiety, and everything that I wrote, I would immediately delete. But I also felt like I had like constipation of the brain, where I needed to create something, but I didn't like anything that I was writing. And so instead, I started doing doodles. And so I would draw these just, and they're not great, but they're, you know, they're just pen and ink doodles. And I would, as I was doing them, I would just write little words of, you know, here's the thing that I'm thinking at the time, and here's what's getting me through. And I would share them, and suddenly all of these people started to not only really love them, but they started showing up as tattoos. All these people were like, can I get this tattoo? I'm like, why would you? You should get a better tattoo. They're like, no, this one, this is the one that speaks to me. And so what happened was, it ended up that as sort of a stopgap, where I was like, well, I need to do something. I was like, what if I just publish this as like a coloring book? And so that's where You Are Here came from. It just as a, you know, this will buy me time so that I can have more time to work on my next book. And it became a New York Times bestseller, which I didn't even know coloring books could be. Sometimes, you know, your life puts you on this weird path where you think, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm failing. Everything is going wrong. But maybe it's a path you're supposed to be on.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us more about your creative process in general. How do you prepare and work on your books? How do you get over the writer's block?
I struggle with it all the time. That is actually the book that I'm writing right now is all about. Okay.
What is it about?
It's about how all of the hacks that I've learned to deal with, first of all, with having a neurospicy mind, and how to continue to create even during those periods of time. And I keep this, like these physical books, and I will write down every time somebody shares a tip with me, because there are so many things out there that maybe don't work for you, but then something hits and you think, oh, this is what I really need. So for example, my creative process looks very different than, I have a lot of friends who are writers and they're like, you have to treat it as a job. You have to wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and you have to write until 5 and you have to have this word count and you have to. This doesn't work for me at all, because when I write and I'm not in the right frame of mind, I don't like it. And then I delete it. And so I'm just sort of wasting my time. So instead, for me, it looks like a lot of walking, a lot of pacing, a lot of, my dog enjoys it because I'll put Dorothy Barker on the leash and I'll be like, we have to walk. And I'm going to tell you, I tell my dog about what I'm working on. And
oh, wow.
Just talking about it can sometimes hit and make me go, oh, that's how it's all going to tie together. And what's funny is sometimes I make sure I only stay on my street, because I never know when the muse is going to hit. But when it does, I run back inside, run to my computer, and I type as fast as I can, because I never know how long it's going to last when like my ADHD is going to go, whoop, it's all gone. And my whole family, they know this look of when they're like, hey, do you, and they're like, oh no, oh no. And they're like, oh.
She's in the fervor, just like this.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then there's also lots of little things. Like one of the things that I write about is, so there's this thing called body doubling, which can be really helpful. And it is not the same thing as doppelganging, which is when your evil twin is haunting you and trying to kill you. Don't do that. But body doubling is basically where you have somebody come and be with you when you're doing something that's hard. And they're not helping you, but just having them. And maybe you're cleaning out, you know, a room that's just filled with stuff and you cannot do it and you're so tired. But if you have someone in there with you, even if they're just playing on the phone, it reminds you that you're there. It keeps you from being distracted. Very often when my kid comes home from college, I'll be like, hey, I've got writing to do. You want to body double with me? And they'll open up their laptop and they'll be doing their chemistry homework. And I'm working and it keeps me at my computer. And one of the other things that I found that's very, very interesting and sounds absolutely ridiculous. But like I say, you don't know until you try it. And if you try it and it doesn't work, then, you know, keep looking. But there are these things that they're basically like Zoom quiet hours for writers, and they happen, they're available pretty much all over. So you just go online and find one, and you open up your Zoom, and you will see all these people also typing. And in the chat, you can go in and say, hey, what's the word for, you know, whatever this is. And somebody might go in and say, oh, it's this. But there's something about looking up and seeing, I'm not alone. There's other people also working. And I think that's probably what people who aren't introverts do at Starbucks. But I am an introvert. And for me, every time I see and people are like, you should go to someplace. I'm like, no, no, that would be awful. The entire time I would be like, are people looking at me? I feel so dumb. Why do I have my laptop out? Does somebody want this chair?
You know what? I'm an introvert and I love those tips because I also work from home alone. And you're right. When nobody's watching you, it is so easy to get distracted and you end up not doing anything. And it's true. Just having a presence there, just another person there, keeps you accountable. And I love that like silent Zoom idea that like these are really great tips.
They're fun and they are things that I've worked very hard to I always just call it my toolbox of, and I always, because I talk to a lot of writers and artists, and I'll ask them or email them and say, like, what's the hack that you have? What's the thing that, and they all have such different ones. And they, like, you know, Maureen Johnson has one of those, it's like a cookie jar, but it's a timered cookie jar. Where it's supposed to be, you set the timer and you can only have the cookie when you want it, except she takes her phone when she's working and she puts it in there and she sets it, and she turns it and she's like, well, now I can't be distracted. I couldn't do that, but I love the idea of it.
Yeah. Sometimes I put my phone in a drawer and then it makes me forget that it's in the drawer and then I'm working and then I'm like, where's my phone?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And then also your story about how like sometimes the muse hits you and then you just have to like get into that writing mode. Tell me how much of your writing is created in those modes. Is that like most of your writing is in those modes, or do you have another mode where it's more like methodical? Let me just type it out calmly. I'm curious because it's like how sometimes people are super creative and that's really a productive mode, but I'm curious how much of your creativity happens there.
When it comes to humor, 100% has to be that.
Oh.
And it may be where I'll write one page in a week. So that's the reason why that process to me can be very slow. And especially I'll walk around with where I'm like, I have this story to tell and I really want to tell the story, but what's the best way to tell it? And I walk around with it and I'm constantly, you know, fiddling with it over and over. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, oh, what if I do it chronologically? What if I do it as an open letter to myself? What if I do it as, and whenever that hits, then I've got it. But if I'm writing—
This is the creative brain. Yes. I love it.
But if I'm writing something that is serious, then very often it's a little bit easier to do it, you know, to sit down and do it. The other thing that I'm sure other writers get the same thing. But a lot of times when I'm dealing with something that's really hard, it feels like I can't process it until I write it, that it doesn't exist until it's on the paper. And then I can say, oh, this is what it really meant. And this is how I find value in it. And also just being able to just shut the page, which, you know, my husband, you know, he really tries to, but he doesn't really get mental illness. And so sometimes I'll have these hyper fixations about really dark, negative things or, you know, things that are happening in the world that I can't stop worrying about. And so I'm like, here's what I need to do is I need to hyper focus on it long enough to write about it, find out everything about it, put it down, even if nobody reads it, just put it down so that it can exist on paper so it doesn't exist in my head anymore. And he's just like, but just don't think about it. Just don't. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. So giving yourself permission to use, I love therapy. I'm a big fan of it, but you can't always get to therapy. And sometimes the page can be great therapy. And the same thing with doodling. This week has been, you know, a rough week, and my doodles are houses on fire and, you know, being lost at sea, because that's just kind of how I feel. And I know next week I'll probably be like, everything's okay, it's all good. But until I get that out in a cathartic way, until I really allow myself to feel it, then I can't get past it.
Yeah, I can totally relate. I'm a huge journaler. Like, it's just such a great tool for expressing your emotions and getting those thoughts out of your head. So do you keep a lot of journals and keep a lot of writing that's separate from blogging and books?
I do. They're not really journals. Okay. They are, usually a lot of it is my notes in my phone. Very often, I have my notes are filled with, first of all, they're filled with an awful lot of stuff that I just look at and I go, what did that mean? I had one the other day that said, buy wine for babies. I was like, why do babies need wine? But then I also have a lot where I'll think, oh, you know, it would be a great story. And I always think, I'll write it down later. I'm not going to write it down later. So instead I pull up my notes and I'm like, okay, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. And then in the end, something else happens. And so I have thousands of notes of different ideas, or, you know, here's what I was thinking when I read this book, or, you know, and then later I can go through and say, is this worth developing? You know, is this worth, and especially because sometimes you might look at something and think, this is really important to me. And then a week later it passes and you go, you know what? It really wasn't actually. That was, maybe I was, you know, dealing with some depression. I was dealing with some anxiety. And so it allows me to kind of put a bookmark on pain or joy or whatever it is to say, you can come back to this. And then it sort of frees up my brain.
Yeah, love that. So I also want to ask you about, I guess, balancing your success with your personal life, because even though you're successful, right, you're still struggling with your mental health to this day. And it's so real that you share that. How do you navigate that? Because I think a lot of people would think, oh, you're successful now. You don't have to have depression. Like, why are you still depressed?
I'll give you something to be depressed about.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that? Like, successful on the outside, but still life is life.
Yes. You know, I think it's something that is difficult for people who don't deal with depression to understand. So I have what's called treatment-resistant depression, which basically means if you've gone through 9 different types of treatments and it still isn't cured, they kind of just say, you don't really have, we're not going to be able to cure you. But they can still treat the symptoms. You know, I still take medication. I still, you know, do this and that. Well, there's a couple of things. One is, I'm going to get distracted and forget about the second one. But one of the things that I love to tell this story, because I wish that I could have told myself this story earlier. When my kid Haley was little, when I would go through these depressive periods, I couldn't do anything except basically just cling to the couch and survive. And I would think about the fact that, you know, all of these other mothers are out and they're like making a home cooked meal and they're, you know, they joined the PTA and they're doing all of these things. And I'm not doing any of that. And I'm, you know, making macaroni and cheese and the single serving one. So I'm making like 4 of them and dumping them together. So what I would do during that time is I would say, you know what this is? This is Doctor Who time. And because Haley, when they were little, they really liked Doctor Who. And it's just this, you know, it's dark, but it's kind of magical. And so we would watch it together and I would turn it on and they would sit with me and we would watch it. And I would just say, you know, mommy's really tired. Well, let's have Doctor Who time. And when they got old enough that I could explain it to them, I said, I just want to apologize because I wish I could have been a better mother. And I compare myself to all of these other mothers who were kicking ass. And I, you know, very often was not. And Haley said, I had no idea. And what's really weird is those were my favorite times with you because you were 100% with me. You weren't off, you know, doing laundry. You weren't, you know, cooking. You weren't on your computer. You were just laying in the couch with me, 100% focused on watching Doctor Who with me. And so I think a lot of times we think that something looks dysfunctional because we compare it to everybody else. But really it comes down to what works for you and what works for your family, and that you can judge it with different eyes. And I also think that giving yourself permission to be who you are and to struggle gives other people permission, and it allows other family members. I mean, I don't talk about Haley's journey because that's their own, even though they're an adult, I'm like, that's still your story. But if you talk to your kids about stuff like this, it makes it so much easier for them to come to you and say, hey, I'm really struggling, because it gives them permission to say, oh, you're going to understand this. I can say this thing to you and you're not going to be scared, even though you will be scared if your kid is struggling, but still it opens up those doors, which is really nice. And then also the other thing is, a lot of times when I'm dealing with something, I get offered a lot of like, hey, do you want to go on this trip? Do you want to do this influencer thing? Do you want to have this job? And almost always I have to say no, because I know that I only have a limited amount of energy and I'm not going to be able to spend it in the right place. And so for a long time, I felt like, oh, I'm wasting my life. I'm wasting all of these opportunities. And then I realized those things aren't the things that are going to make me happy. The things that actually make me happy, I made a list of them. And I was like, what do I do to get more of this? And those things were sitting outside under a tree and reading a book. Like, that's my favorite thing to do. Every Saturday, I'm under a tree reading a book. And I would rather do that than be in, you know, any fancy hotel. So why am I judging myself and saying, oh, everybody else is, you know, at this conference, everybody else got invited to this thing, everybody else. All I have to do is judge myself against who I was yesterday and what I want. So reassessing that, and it's so hard, especially, you know, with Instagram, and you see all these people and they have these like shiny, happy, perfect lives, because you're just seeing like the best of the best reel. You're not seeing the dirty underground or the fights that they had or any of that. So I also think it's really kind of lovely to share that, you know, the darker stuff. Like this room that I'm in right now, before, usually when I do, you know, Zooms and podcasts, I'm usually in my office, and my office has this really pretty bookshelf, and it's all like rainbow colored, and all my books are behind it, and it's so pretty, but it has no doors. Is so loud. I feel like people are staring at me all the time because it has these big windows. And so instead, I am in a spare bedroom that was literally, it looked like a hoarder lived here. It was piles and piles of just crap, because every time I would get panicked and be like, oh, my house is a mess, I'd be like, let's put it all in this room. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, when I was out of a depression and had energy like a normal, I'm putting parentheses around normal, a neurotypical person, I was able to spend a couple of days and fix it. And I really wanted to share because I was so proud of it, but I was also so ashamed of where it had been. And so for a couple of days, I went back and forth. And then finally, I showed a before and after, even though it was really embarrassing. And there were so many people who were just like, I am so relieved, because not only do I have a room like that, sometimes my whole house looks like that. And I'm so embarrassed, and I don't want to have anybody come over, because I think, am I the only one who lives like that? But, you know, maybe if you can do it, maybe I can do it too. And I explained, you know, the thing that really helped me was, even with that body doubling, my kid was home from college and they sat in a chair and, you know, played Stardew Valley while I sorted through things. And it's okay to share your challenges, even if they're really ugly. It's okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all those stories, Jenny. I see so much. I mean, there was so much that I could talk about, but I think overall the feeling I get about you is you're hard on yourself because you're already amazing, but what you do have is the courage to share and communicate. Like sharing the difficult things you've been through, just the things you've overcome, connects you to people. And also the story about you and your daughter, the Doctor Who time, like that's beautiful because even though you might have felt like a failure in that moment, like your daughter loved those moments. So in a way, like it's all about perspective and there's no failing at life. I don't know. It's a beautiful story. And the fact that you can communicate and even share with your daughter, right? Like, I think that's a huge part too, versus I think a lot of parents would just never talk about it, brush over it. There's so much awkwardness and unsaid, yeah, I don't know, me coming from immigrant parents, there's no communication, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the fact of sharing, communicating, and it just makes everything feel more okay and accepting. And, you know, nobody's perfect, but it feels lighter if you can open up and share.
Exactly. We're all in this together. Everybody is having amazing joy and also terrible times. And we can share that with each other and help to carry that load. I'm so lucky that I have a great community who, you know, helps to support that. But I think it's important in any situation to go out and find that community for you. Find, you know, a lot of people, when they sort of find my like readers or my blog, they're like, oh my gosh, it's home. Oh, finally, I found a place. And so I think a lot of times you just have to go out and explore. And sometimes that might be online, which for me is really helpful as an introvert. But there are so many peer groups, and there's art clubs, and there's book clubs, and there's so many, and you can, you know, create your own. Or there's, you know, my kid does, they do Dungeons and Dragons, and that's their, you know, they love that. And they get to communicate by telling these stories. And I don't entirely understand it, but it seems interesting, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, Jenny, so if you could leave our listeners with one final message, it could be anything. What would it be?
I think the thing that has saved me over and over, and maybe you need to hear it as well if you're out there, is that depression lies. And that if you are in a depression, those voices that you're hearing and the things that that they're saying, they sound so right, and they are absolutely not. And that helps me over and over whenever I'm in a depression and I start to believe the really dark lies. That's my little sign that says you need to call your therapist. You need to ask for help. You need to tell your husband that you're struggling a little so maybe he can, you know, keep an eye on you a little bit. I think it can be very hard to ask for help, but people really do want to help. They may not understand exactly how. And so sometimes what you have to do is you have to say, hi, I'm really struggling, and this is what I need from you. And maybe, I do this a lot with my kid, where they'll come and they'll be like, oh, I'm having such a hard time with this. And so I'm like, oh, okay, look, here's how we fix this. Maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do. And they get so frustrated because they're like, I don't want you to solve it. I just want you to listen. And so being able to communicate and say, what is it you really want from me, has been such a game changer for me to be able to say, okay, do you want advice or do you want solace? And if they say, I want solace, I'm like, that sucks. Let's burn their garage down. I hate that person too. Or if they say, I don't know, then I'm like, okay, well, what you could do is this, but you don't have to follow my advice, but it's really good advice. So, you know, finding the people that you can talk to, finding the ones that you can ask for help. And you know, you can even ask for help if you don't have anyone, if you feel like you don't have anyone. You probably do, but sometimes you feel like you don't. crisis hotlines can be so helpful. If you can call them anonymously. There's even text ones. I've texted before because sometimes even talking on the phone can be too scary. You can look up, text crisis hotline and they can talk to you. And also if you, let's say you're dealing with somebody in your family and they have depression or anxiety and you're like, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know what the answers are. I don't know how to talk to them. You can call those same hotlines and say, hey, I'm really struggling. What do I say if my kid says this or my husband says this or how do I handle that? There's so many people out there who have been in that same situation over and over. Most of those people are answering those calls and they've been on the other side and they see when they come out, oh my gosh, oh, I'm so glad I'm still here. So give yourself that same grace.
Amazing.
I'm sorry, that was so long.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It was very helpful. And then it was actually very practical. I'm going to add the crisis hotline number to this episode. Awesome. Okay, finally, Jenny, where can we find you online?
I am at the blog S pretty much everywhere, TheBloggess. I tend to use Threads a lot right now. That's kind of where I'm usually based. And then my blog is just thebloggess.com. And if you want to find me in person, I have a bookshop in San Antonio. And so you can come and visit Nowhere. And sometimes I'm there, usually hiding in the back, drinking, because there's also a bar. And because
how fun.
Why wouldn't you have? I mean, come on, bar and books. That's so good. Such a good combo.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Jenny. You are such a light. And like I said earlier, you're much too hard on yourself because you're amazing. But I also admire your courage. So thank you for being you and being courageous to share yourself and your uniqueness with the world.
Well, thank you so much. And also thank you for this podcast because it is really lovely. And I have been listening to it and all the affirmations. And I'm just like, oh, this is something I really needed this week. So thank you for what you do.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. It was so nice to have you on. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please show your support by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavender lifestyle. Lastly, follow me on YouTube and Instagram at Lavender for more content on creating your dream life. Sending you so much love. Bye.